This is Frankly MSP, where managed service providers get real.
Hey, and welcome to episode 22 of Frankly MSP, the podcast for managed service providers who want to boost their productivity, efficiency, and profitability. I'm your host, Jennifer Tribe. We've been producing this podcast for about 9 months now. We'll celebrate the one-year anniversary of its launch at the beginning of October. First of all, time flies. Wow, I can't believe it's been 9 months. But also, as we approach the one-year anniversary, it's gotten me into an assessment sort of mood. Our goal from the start with Frankly MSP has been to produce a very helpful podcast, free of fluff, with practical advice on successfully running, improving, and growing a managed service provider business. We've heard anecdotally from a bunch of you that we're on track with that goal, which is great. Thank you for all the feedback that you've given us so far. We'd love to know more. What do you like? What do you love about the Frankly MSP podcast? Or where do we miss the mark? What really grinds your gears about this show? To find out, we've set up a quick online survey, and we'd really appreciate it if you could take 3 minutes to fill it out. It is very quick. And as thanks for your time, if you complete the survey, you'll be entered into a draw for a $25 Amazon gift card and an Avik t-shirt. I'll put a link to the survey in today's show notes at avik.com/franklymsp/022. That's Avik, A-U-V as in Victor, I-K as in kayak, .com/franklymsp/022. I'm really looking forward to hearing your thoughts, so please do take a couple of minutes to complete that survey. Now, on with the show. My guest today is Chris Rumpf, the founder and CEO of Flight, an MSP that specializes in serving the restaurant and hospitality industries. Chris has had very good success with something I found very intriguing, turning his managed services into products, essentially packaging and positioning his ongoing fees as defined products. And he says it's helped his team with sales and marketing by shifting the conversation with clients away from cost, how many hours am I paying for here, to value. And I thought this was a very interesting approach and maybe a little counterintuitive. After all, MSPs are managed service providers, right? Not managed product providers. So that's certainly worth exploring, and we'll hear Chris's thoughts about it a bit later in the show. But before we get to that interview, let's check in with Richard Tubb and Carl Palachuk for a look at what's going on in the world through an MSP lens.
You're listening to Frankly MSP, brought to you by Avik Networks.
Hi, folks. Richard Tubb here at home in Newcastle upon Tyne in the studio. Garage, my new place of recording here. Carl, after I listened to last week's episode with Jennifer in the new studio at the offices there, I thought I needed to make an effort. So hopefully I sound good today.
Sound good to me, but then you always do.
Oh, bless you. And if you didn't know, I'm joined today by my good friend and MSP expert, Carl Palachuk. And I understand it's around July the 4th time and you're somewhere special today, Carl.
Yes, I'm making a secret rendezvous to New Orleans. Meet up with some friends and some partners here and just enjoy the 4th of July holiday.
Fantastic. I wanted to kick things off this week by talking what's been going on with me. And last week, I actually went back to my hometown of Birmingham for the CompTIA UK channel community meeting. Now, if you're not familiar with CompTIA as a listener, then they're almost like a trade association, a non-profit for the IT industry. CompTIA run lots of communities with the goal of raising the standards of the IT industry. The Birmingham meeting was the largest regional meeting of the community to date, which personally made me very proud as it was almost 8 years ago. I was honoured to be voted in as the very first chairman of the CompTIA UK channel community. And I can remember our very first meeting, which was also in Birmingham. There were around 20 of us sat around a table, and its last meeting, there were around 150 of us. So some progress. Carl, you're very familiar with CompTIA. You're going to head off to CompTIA ChannelCon in a couple of weeks, I understand.
Yes. You know, when I owned an MSP, I always belonged to CompTIA because I could get the training for the various certifications for all of my technicians, and we had access to all of their resources. So it's a wonderful group, and I'm going to ChannelCon, which is July 31st through August 2nd in Washington, D.C.
Going back to the UK channel community, which is one of the CompTIA communities, it was a really busy day in Birmingham for us. We had a lot of educational sessions, but there was one session, Carl, that really caught my attention, and it was by Mark Matthews owner of Birmingham-based MSP ATG. Now, Mark gave a really great presentation with the interesting title of How a Crisp Packet Changed My Business. Now, crisps, or I guess it's chips to our US listeners.
Right, potato chips.
Potato chips, that was the one. What it was, Mark was actually saying there was like a crisp or a potato chip packet sitting outside his office, and it was there for days, and then it was there for weeks, and Mark, frankly, couldn't understand why none of his staff had picked it up. He couldn't understand, in a nutshell, why they didn't think about the business and about how to keep everything clean and tidy in the same way that he did. And Mark went on in his presentation to talk about almost a moment of enlightenment when he read a book called Traction by the author Gino Wickman. Now, this is a book that I've seen making great waves in the MSP scene at the moment. It's a book that transformed Mark's view on his business. Have you come across the Traction book before, Carl?
I have. It's on my Kindle. I haven't read it yet.
Ditto. So exactly the same for me. I picked it up as a result of Mark's presentation here. Haven't read it. If I just go over Mark's presentation, because he basically Traction talks about the EOS, the Entrepreneur's Operating System. And the six core sort of steps to this EOS, the Entrepreneur's Operating System, the first one being vision, core values for you and the team. Secondly, people, surrounding yourself with great people who share your core values. The third step is data, managed by metrics. Everybody should have a number. Fourth is process, identifying core processes and knowing how to do them well. And five is the title of the book, Traction, assigning responsibilities and keeping a pulse of your progress. So obviously, there's a lot more to Mark's presentation and the Traction book than that. In fact, I'd encourage you to reach out to Mark. He is at The Crisp Guy on Twitter, which I think is a brilliant handle. And like you, Carl, I've bought my copy of Traction to read, but it really got me thinking about a question that was thrown out at the start of the day. I was hosting a panel session of some of the UK's top MSPs, and a member of the audience asked myself and the other members of the panel, is it easier or harder to run an MSP now than in the past? So, you know, given the book Traction, and it talks about growing a business and all the things that you need to do, Carl, you've built an MSP business, I've built an MSP business, and we've both helped lots of other people to build MSPs. What do you think to that question? Is it easier now, or is it harder now to run an MSP than in the past?
You know, that's an interesting question, because I would say it is easier to get started and easier to run if you are connected to a community. If you are on your own, you don't know what you don't know. And so you don't know how to price things. You don't know what tools people use. You don't know what works when you're a three-person shop versus a 12-person shop. The only way to get that knowledge is to either grow really slowly and figure it out, or to be involved in a community where you can ask those questions and have somebody give you advice. So I think if you're connected, and of course, you don't know how to get connected when you first start out. But if you're connected, it's easier to get going. And to be honest, I think it's easier to run today because there are so many processes and procedures available. There's your blog, my blog, lots of material out there. And people can adopt an entire operating system, as you say, for running their MSP business. And that certainly was not what you and I had 15 or 20 years ago.
I've been on record before about saying when I started off an MSP, there was a lot less information. But thankfully, and this makes you blush every time I say it, you're my tech hero, Carl. Your blog was around giving information. And to be honest, my answer to that question very much mirrored yours. I think there is more information, there's more documentation, there are more really cool tools that make life easier to get started and to run an MSP business than ever before. But you really hit on something that I think is hugely important, and that's the community aspect. I grew my MSP business a lot faster than I otherwise would have because I was involved in CompTIA, because I was involved with HTG, because I was involved in peer user groups locally. So what do you see as the current state of the market? What does it look like out there for people collaborating and getting together in peer groups?
Well, on one hand, it's easier than ever because there's so many groups. But you mentioned HTG, CompTIA. There's also ASCII. There's My New Community. There's so many organizations, and they are growing all the time. On the other hand, it's a little difficult because you can't participate in every group at a super high level. We all have to figure out how to use the information we have to filter the knowledge we have so that we can get through our day and still grow our business. So it's always going to be a challenge, but you know, we live in a shifting environment and you need to be connected into some community just to stay ahead and to stay even with what's going on in changing technology.
The aspect of community just opens up avenues to other resources that you perhaps otherwise wouldn't have heard of. Now, I'd never come across this book, Traction, by Gino Wickman before. Thankfully, I was at the CompTIA meeting when Mark Matthews of ATG mentioned it. I know I came across the eMyth book, which I describe as a Bible for MSPs. And I'm pretty sure I came across that from reading one of your blogs, Carl. So just by getting involved, just by keeping your ears and your eyes open and going along to these meetings and reading these blogs, you actually get exposed to a lot of resources that you otherwise wouldn't have as well.
Yes. And if you are a reader or someone who listens to audiobooks, it's great to be in these communities just to find out what other people are reading. Because if you are a reader, you go through these books voraciously and you run out of stuff to read. So it's always nice to have a new good business book to read.
Exactly. I don't think I'm going to ever run out of stuff to read. In fact, I'm glancing across at my to read pile and it's already 6 books high, and that's just books I've purchased in the last month. So I think the key for me here is I need to learn to read faster. So going from one old technology, reading and books and the written word, to a modern technology, a very modern technology, and a story that caught your eye this week, Carl, and this is to do with Microsoft data centers underwater. Tell us more about this.
Yes, so Microsoft's been working on this for about 4 years, but last month they announced that they have actually deployed an underwater data center off the shores of Scotland, and actually probably fairly close to you. One of the things they talk about is how the vast majority of the human population, more than half of the human population, lives within 120 miles of the coast. So if you can have data centers that are just off the coastlines in the major cities, basically you can get to the point where everybody is one hop from the internet. And so, you know, obviously this is going to be Microsoft centric. These are Microsoft data centers, but this one container that they dropped down had, I believe, 864 servers on board. And it's about the size of a shipping container. It's about 40 feet long, but it sits at the bottom of the ocean on a rock bed and is cooled by the ocean water actually flowing in through the middle of the system in a tube that's right behind the servers and takes the heat from the servers back out to the ocean, which is technology they learned from submarines. It's a very cool technology, and the idea is, if the proof of concept works, they will deploy these in cities all over the world.
I'm really glad you explained it to me, because when you first mentioned this story to me, I had visions in my head of, say, something like Atlantis with merpeople as a data center operatives sort of swimming around. But it sounds as though they're quite relatively small devices that can quite easily and cost-effectively be deployed to a seabed near you anywhere, I guess.
Yes. And again, since the majority of the people in the world live close to the water, it's actually a pretty clever way to deploy these, because of course the land is very expensive near the water. And so the only thing I worry about, which is not addressed in the Microsoft notes, is won't this have some contribution to the warming of the oceans?
We've touched upon this before, haven't we, with Bitcoin mining and activities like this, how these activities, more and more of this computing at scale is eating up more and more resources. Have you got any statistics on this? What are the environmental impacts of burying these data centers at the bottom of the sea?
I don't know. I've mostly read the Microsoft materials on this, so they have not discussed that, although they've been working with several different countries in the EU, which currently includes Scotland. You know, I know that they're working with environmentally sound practices to the extent they can, and they're connected to a power source that is 100% renewable energy to power this. That thing about electricity and how we're going to have enough electricity to build all these data centers is still an open question, because electricity is growing very quickly, especially solar power, but we are literally having exponential growth of data centers. One of the things Microsoft said is that if you look at all the data centers that will be built, we haven't built most of them yet. So you know, it's growing every day. The good news for managed service providers is that this will speed up, assuming this technology takes off, it would speed up access to more artificial intelligence and more computing power and speed of internet connectivity for our clients. So we get to stay in business for another 10 years.
Mm, and I think there's there's some degree of irony as well. You and I talked about running an MSP back in the day. You know, one of our terrifying situations is always the comms room being subject to a leak or getting flooded. And now, of course, we're literally building comms rooms and dunking them at the bottom of the ocean. Interesting times that we live in. So we'll draw a line under it there. We'll keep an eye on that story as things go forward.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Frankly MSP.
As always, I'll put links to the resources Carl and Richard discuss in today's show notes at ovic.com/franklymsp/022. Now we come to my interview with Chris Rumpf, founder and CEO of an MSP called Flight. Chris has been in managed services for about 15 years, and he admits he was pretty green starting out. But over the years, he's settled into a well-defined industry niche, serving restaurant and hospitality clients, and he's focused on standardization and automation throughout his business. But one other thing he's done is packaged his services as products, and he says it's made a big difference to his business. Let's get the details. Hi, Chris. Welcome to Frankly MSP.
Hi.
Why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about your company called Flight? Because I know not all that long ago, you were called Rumpf Computer Solutions. You've gone through a bit of a transformation in the last little while.
That's true. The funny story is that when we started this business 12, 13 years ago now, I was a pipsqueak, like 22-year-old. I literally walked into the government office and was like, I need a business license. And they were like, well, what's it called? And I was like, I don't know. And they said, well, we're closing in a half an hour, so you got to pick something. We never really had a business name that was geared towards what we did as a company. So we decided to change the name last year to Flight. Not that that is any better, but at least better than having your last name as your company name.
I thought it was pretty cool. It tied in nicely to the brand that you were developing there.
It's much more fun. We like it. Customers seem to like it. Certainly easier to say and just as difficult to spell. So,
yeah. And for listeners, it's F-L-Y-G-H-T instead of I in the middle.
We are trendy, just like Lyft and every other company that wants to pretend that they're something these days, it seems.
And the URL was available. I assume that was part of it too.
It took a long time to figure that part out.
Yeah. Okay, so give us a little thumbnail sketch of Flight, like how big you are, what kind of business you're doing.
So we're actually pretty small. We outsource a whole ton of stuff. So we have 6 full-time people in our office up in Ohio. About 2/3 of our revenue comes from reoccurring services. The rest is mostly project-type work. And over the last 4 years, we've been growing at a rate that's been higher than 40 to 50% year over year.
That's amazing. And now I should break in here. Some of you hardcore Ovic fans may be thinking, Rumpf, where do I know that name? I interviewed Chris a couple of years ago for an ebook we were writing on how emerging MSPs can punch above their weight. And he was quoted specifically on tip number 3, which was the power of integrating your MSP systems, and tip number 6 on standardizing the technologies you support. I'll put a link to the ebook in the show notes if you want to check it out, because Chris offers some great advice and insight on those topics in there. And clearly they've been working for him. But today I want to talk about productizing your services, that is creating products out of services, which is something that Chris has been pursuing. So Chris, why did you decide to go this route?
Well, it's simpler. And I like simplicity. There's certainly more to it than that, but that alone is one of the most driving factors behind it. Fact is that when we sell services, people tend to always equate those services back to some semblance of an hourly cost to them or an hourly expense. And when we are able to productize services, it makes us go in a situation where we're having a conversation around value rather than hours. And so it changes the whole dynamic of the customer relationship.
Let's say in your marketing, how are you positioning things differently?
Well, again, it's all based on value now. So 3 years ago when we were offering wireless, when people asked for it, they were like, we need wireless. And we're like, okay, well, here's this device and you buy it and have fun. Now, when we're going in and having a conversation with people, it's around the value of things. And so we've tied the wireless product that we use into some marketing avenues. And so, for instance, in order to access the wireless in a lot of places, you'll have to check in on Facebook before you're able to get access to the internet. We're able to use that value for our customers to go and say, listen, you know, we're providing the service. And obviously, if the wireless device would ever fail on you, you're going to have a new one that's there the next day and there's no cost to you. And as people use it, you're going to be able to see how often they use it, how many minutes or hours they're on there, and also how many people are checking in to your page on Facebook and creating some significant value for our customers that way.
Do you think that offering these things that you do as products helps you stand out in the market against other MSPs you might be going up against?
I certainly think so. One of the big things for us is that we now have marketing around these individual products. Like, it's one thing to be able to walk in as a salesperson and say, hey, we offer managed firewalls. So you can come in, we're going to put our device in here. You're going to pay us a few $100 up front. You're going to pay us $100 a month or whatever the number may be. You know, we're going to help you and we're going to figure out what that looks like. That's one way that you can do it. But if you come in and you say, yeah, so we have a product called Flight Protect. Flight Protect has a certain number of features. It has a certain value set and value proposition. And we have marketing materials and a web page behind that to be able to really encourage people to understand what that is. And now I can have sales folks that are walking in and saying, we have the Flight Protect service. It's a few $100 up front. It's X number of dollars a month. And you're receiving X, Y, Z and getting A, B, and C from us on a regular basis. And here's what we're going to do. And here's what this looks like. And here's what the value of this product is over time, because it's consistent and the same.
Yeah. And I have to admit that when I went to check out your new Flight website and I saw some of these packaged services or products, if we want to call them that, it seemed very different to me, very different from the way I see a lot of other MSPs positioning themselves. And it did seem very attractive to me, and I'm not even in your target market, very attractive to me that I could say, oh yes, like I'm going to take the Flight Protect and I'm going to take this and this, and it's all taken care of. It was very appealing.
When you look at it that way, it makes it much easier for someone to jump on board with you for whatever is paining them on that particular day. And once your foot is in the door, it becomes much easier to build trust and garner new business from folks like that. I don't know that I struggle with this anymore. I'm sure that I perhaps sometimes do, because by nature, it's not me. But most of the folks that are starting an MSP or are running or owning a company in tech, they are technical people. There's not a whole lot of folks that start tech companies that aren't technical. And there's nothing wrong with that. The problem is that when you have very technical people at the helm who generally aren't salespeople, and I'm certainly guilty of this and was, is that we don't understand how to sell or who we're selling to or what that looks like.
What's involved in turning a service into a product? What's the change that you need to make?
I mean, the simplest thing is you go into your CRM program and you create a product code. It's actually that simple. After you get around that, you have to decide, you know, from your historical data, if you have it, or your best guesstimate in terms of what is the average cost of this. One of the things that we product coded a really long time ago was menu builds on restaurant setups. So we're in the retail and restaurant hospitality space. So when we go and we build a menu for a restaurant customer, that costs a fixed dollar amount. And we tweaked that a little bit up and down when we began. But we knew roundabout the number of hours that it took to build that up and what our cost was on that. So we used that average to create a product code around it. And some we win big and others we only win a little bit, depending on the hours that are used, but it all averages out to something that simple.
So is it finite project work that works better as a product, or are you also turning ongoing services into product codes?
Everything is product coded, and the stuff that is not will be at some point, I hope. So you can product code managed wireless, which is something that we've been doing for a couple of years now and has been very successful for us. So, you know, we have a product code for a monthly service for customer public Wi-Fi in restaurants and retail environments. our customers will pay us an upfront dollar amount, maybe $100, something super cheap just to get it in there and installed. And then anywhere between $10 and $30 a month, depending on the number of access points that they have.
So what else have you turned into a product?
So we're doing the same type of thing that we're doing with wireless in almost every avenue of infrastructure. So not just wireless, but firewalls, security cameras, and other things like that. So there's a lot of things that you can do, not just the traditional stuff, and certainly not just project work.
Is there always a product rolled in, like an actual product, like a physical firewall or a physical wireless access point with a one-time fee that's rolled into this product that's also an ongoing fee?
It certainly doesn't have to. Some things are software only. So our managed antivirus stuff that we do is just software. Other things is purely service. So we have a number of accounts that we do some significant consulting type stuff for. And instead of lumping that into project-based hours, we create a contract and then do a one-year or three-year engagement with them monthly. And then we just, you know, set 30-day, 90-day, 180-day, 360-day cadences for things and goals around those.
Is this really just another name for a flat fee engagement where it's the same dollar amount each month?
You and I can have this conversation, and if folks are listening, they might be thinking, well, this is really the same thing with a new coat of paint on it. And from a technical perspective, there are some nuances in terms of what you're automating and how your economies of scale are set up and what you're doing from a back-end perspective to continually show the value. But aside from those things, yeah, I mean, you're still offering a firewall. You're figuring out ways to minimize the amount of time that you're spending internally on managing those devices, but you're still just offering a firewall like you would have before. The difference is for the end user and the customer that's out there looking at it, who has now a different way to see the field and a different way to see what is out there and what technology can do for them. And it simplifies the marketing process. It simplifies the sales process. And it certainly makes things easier.
Are you finding that this positioning is landing you more clients, shortening your sales cycle? Like, what are the benefits that you're seeing as you go out in the market with this?
I think that we've done ourselves a disservice over the last couple of years in the sense that we didn't necessarily update our sales strategy to fall in line with our marketing strategy. We're just now starting to branch out and kind of change the way that we go and sell. What I can say is that our normal lead-in products, they generally have time to sale of maybe 4 weeks to 10 weeks. So it's a long sales cycle for us. And what we're finding is that we're able to go out and have conversations with people that aren't using that main product. And instead, we're talking about these other products. We're talking about infrastructure, and we're talking about the way that we market things or the way that we secure their environment or access and security systems. And in doing that, we're finding that we're able to offer easy solutions that people are able to pick up in a shorter cycle and build trust in a shorter period of time. So we're certainly going through now and adjusting the way that our P&Ls look so that we can get a better idea after the fact of where the sales are happening and where our margins lay. But in terms of profitability and in terms of where the money's coming in, we're seeing a significant increase in gross margin on our products just because of the way that we are standardizing things. So one of the things that I didn't really mention with a product code, and I probably should have, is standardization is key. In our entire business, automation and standardization is really what we're trying to achieve, because every milestone that we hit there enables us to provide a greater level of value because of the consistency that we offer to the customer base, but also provide ourselves with a higher margin and a more profitable company.
On the standardization side, I know a lot of MSPs struggle with standardizing because they're afraid that they're going to lose clients if they say, look, we've got to get you on this gear. What's been your experience with that?
It's fear of fear. It's the same conversation that I have with people when they are scared of raising their hourly rate before they're even ready to go to a reoccurring or an automation model. It's fear of fear. I remember when this business wasn't 14 years old and we weren't highly profitable, and when we were scrambling and scraping and hustling to make a buck, when somebody said, hey, can we reuse hardware? We'd be like, well, it's worth a shot. Let's try it. And we haven't done that in a long time. I mean, we're talking 4 or 5, 6 years. And we actually made that decision even before we were really profitable almost at all. And I can say that while if you're looking at things from a short-term nature, you might look at that decision to say, oh, we're not going to reuse hardware from other vendors that we don't know and that we are not comfortable with and that somebody might have just paid a lot of money for. And we're going to do that to try and save people money. And if we do that, we're going to win more deals. But the reality of things, when you look at it as a long-term play, is that the majority of the time, if your sales folks are doing the job correctly that they have set out to do, they will be able to curate the value and explain the value of switching to an economies of scale model with us or the MSP that they're going with to use the standardized products and what that value looks like. And inevitably, in the MSP's business, that does make that at the time seemingly difficult decision to standardize and stick to it, you actually become more profitable. And if your sales arm is doing the right thing, you're not losing deals. And if you are losing deals, they're the ones that you would have spent a significant number of man hours on, and they probably would have become unprofitable if you had a method in place to track the profitability of your projects.
That's a good point that I think a lot of MSPs overlook is the money that they can lose on a client who isn't necessarily willing to cooperate on some of the stuff that you recommend. Parting advice for an MSP who's thinking about productizing their services.
Don't wait. I don't think that any MSP that's not doing it will be around in 5 years. The competition is increasing everywhere. And so automation is key to making sure that you're still highly profitable. And if you're not standardizing and you're not using economies of scale, there's really no way to automate.
Thanks so much for sharing this information. Definitely some food for thought here for MSPs.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
That was Chris Rumpf, founder and CEO of Flyte. If you want to take a peek at the Flyte website to see how Chris and his team are marketing their service products or whatever you'd like to call them, go to whatisflyte.com. And that's Flyte with a Y, F-L-Y-G-H-T. So whatisflyght.com. I'll put that URL and Chris's contact info in today's show notes at avic.com/franklymsp/022. I'll also put a link to the Avic ebook, 10 Ways Your Small MSP Can Punch Above Its Weight, where Chris shares a few of his insights about automation and standardization. And also in today's show notes, a link to that Frankly MSP listener survey I mentioned at the top of the show. We really do want to hear from you on what you find helpful and interesting so we can deliver more of that. And hey, while you're at it, why not drop us some stars on iTunes? The more ratings and reviews the Frankly MSP podcast gets, the more people we have the chance to reach and help. So thank you for that. That's a wrap. Till next time, this is Jennifer Tribe. Thanks for listening.
Frankly MSP, brought to you by Avic Networks. The most efficient and profitable way to manage your clients' networks.